Hello again, everybody, and welcome to episode 40 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast. My name is Chris. I'm your host. With me tonight are the lovable Dan.
Hey.
The even more lovable Tiff.
Hi.
And the absolutely unbelievably lovable Dean.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, I clipped the microphone, so that's going to be pretty.
Hurt your feelings?
I think so.
Oh.
Anyway. So, it's the first week of the month. Welcome to March, everybody. How's March treating you all?
The snow.
Lousy smarch weather.
Yeah, the long of winter wanted to hit us one more time before it was over.
Thank you again.
All right, come on. This isn't, you know, the podcast for kids. We don't have a podcast for kids, so I'm going to say what I want.
Well, March has been treating me exceptionally well, I must say. But because it's the first week of the month, we're going to go back and reflect on the joys and raptures that were brought to us by the month of February. And we're going to go ahead and start with Mr. Dan. Dan, what was your favorite game of February?
My favorite game of February was, continuing the tradition that I am a cheap bastard and only play the free PlayStation games, was Apotheon. Apotheon is Alien Trap. It's, I think, like their second or third game, so they're a relatively new studio. But it is, if you've ever seen old Greek pottery, the type of pottery that has the black figures on it, it looks like that has come to life and is participating in a Metroidvania-style adventure. You play the lead character, Nicandros, and basically, if you've played God of War, like the first two God of War games, then you've already played this story. Zeus has decided the humans can fuck directly off, and we're not going to give them things anymore, so the Earth is kind of plunged into darkness and despair, and they don't get any of the gifts of the gods anymore, so Nicandros is going to go kill lots of things, and eventually kill Zeus.
Because that's
going to
help.
Right, because, you know, angry, I will kill you because you didn't give me things. Not really sure about the message this game is sending. But the gameplay itself is really, really awesome. It's one of the more interesting aspects of it is, even though it is a Metroidvania-style game with lots of backtracking and opening up new areas and whatnot, you pretty much, from the get-go, have everything that you're going to be able to do, you can do right away. You don't really get double jumps. You don't really get, like, skills and abilities throughout the game. You just get better at the game and are able to progress through things.
You get new weapons.
You do get new weapons, but you start off the game being able to wield any weapon that you find, which is one of the cooler aspects of it as well, is that the weapons are broken down into three categories. You've got short-range weapons, like you start with your fists and you pick up a sword and a club and that sort of thing, like little axes and shit. Then you have a medium-range weapon where you have like spears and a bow and arrows and that sort of thing. And then you have explosive weapons that you can make if you pick up,
like Greek fire and that kind of thing.
Different items that enemies drop and whatnot. You pick up the things and you can make basically the equivalent of grenades and that sort of shit. And you have them, like I said, from the very beginning. The cool thing about the weapons, and I mean, I think it's cool, but I can imagine that it would frustrate some people, is that the weapons do have a durability count. They will break eventually. So you may have this really badass spear, or you may get this really badass sword, but you have to kind of pick and choose where you're going to use it, because it is going to eventually wear down and break and leave you with, you might just have your fists left at the end of it. So you've got to kind of manage your inventory carefully. You do get armor upgrades throughout the game, like as you go through, which is pretty traditional for this style of game. Your defense increases. You do have a shield that you can carry, where that will get bigger and you can attack with it a little bit later in the game. So you can improve that. But really, everything else, you just do from the beginning. Watching this game in action, though, is so interesting because they didn't make it move 100% fluidly. Like,
it looks like old marionette shadow puppets.
Yeah, like, you can absolutely tell where the joints are. Like, because they don't even operate like regular joints would work on the human body. Because of the way the art style is, they operate more like hinges, almost. So it creates a little bit of a learning curve as you're trying to figure out how you can jump up on things or roll through an attack or fight the enemies or whatever. You have to kind of get used to the way the game moves. And once you actually get used to it, it becomes this really engrossing and really just kind of lovely thing to watch play. It's, I think, the thing that stands out for me the most, graphically anyway, is as you are controlling all of these characters that look just like they are from Pottery, if you look at the background looks like a clay pot with different textures and ripples and cracks in it, and it's just, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's
cool,
almost
to look
like
at.
The characters are running around on a pot.
Yeah, on a clay pot.
Yeah, or on like a wall art or something.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like all of the ground is made out of like what the borders on the pictures on the pottery would be. So it really looks like you're running up and down the art on a pot.
Yeah, it's just, it's a really interesting game to look at. It's got a really great soundtrack too. The soundtrack it's not very heavy. It's a very almost delicate, one might say, soundtrack where it's not trying to, it really doesn't overshadow the game at any time, but it is perfectly complementary to the things that are going on. It's just really, really solid. Like, it's got a couple different puzzles, but there's not like crazy shit that you have to do. Like, most of the puzzles involve, you know, going in and out of a door and just paying attention to the symbols that are on the door, to make sure you don't go through the same one twice and that sort of thing. You go through, and every now and again you have to pick up a key from a guard to unlock a door that's a couple levels down, but really it is a very straightforward action game. The boss battles are really cool. They're really big and involved and lots of fun stuff going on, and it's just a really cool game.
Everyone purchase Pottery Simulator 2015.
It's got some stuff in it that's pretty clever. What I found the most clever about it is at one point you have to travel through the underworld, and you have to travel through the is it six rivers or seven rivers? Six rivers? You have to travel
four.
Through the different rivers. Four?
Yeah, the river Styx and then
the
five.
Four.
The river Styx and then the other
okay,
four.
Regardless, you have to travel through all the different rivers to get down to Hades to get what you want from him. And what's really cool about it is the different stages that represent the different rivers, they put like clever little things in it. Like the River Lethe is the memory loss. Like in mythology, if you would drink the waters of the River Lethe, you could forget. So like if you had some kind of tragedy, it would wipe your memory. And in that particular section of the game, it's a memory puzzle to try and get through it. And there's the River of Fire, and you have to outrun the fire in that level. Like it was kind of clever the way they wove the mythology in, I thought.
Yeah, it really is just plain, like, if you are a fan of Greek mythology, and I mean, really, who isn't? They're just really cool stories, and like it's just really fun to play through it. The voice acting that's in it is pretty cool too. Like it's nothing stellar. Like, I don't think it's gonna win any video game awards for it, but it's pretty solid. Like the woman who's playing Hera has a very commanding and godly voice, and the guy who's playing Hades did a good job. Persephone was cool. Like they all just, everybody sounds good. They sound regal and godly like they should, and you know, the soundtrack, or not the soundtrack, but the dialogue that's in there isn't cheesy or stupid or over the top. Like every now and again playing through God of War, it was like, all right, look, I get it. The game's epic. You can scale it back a little bit here,
but it's
guys.
All so epic.
Yeah, it's not.
It's epically epic.
Yeah. Epic.
He's always yelling at me. Kratos is always yelling.
Yeah, Kratos is just like, Kratos doesn't ever have a quiet moment.
Nap, bugger.
No, well, you can't blame it mainly on Kratos, because, I mean, all the guys in Gears of War are just screaming. Batman screams all the time.
Yeah,
Walter White from Breaking Bad screams. It's just, we're in a generation of people that enjoy screaming.
Yeah, no, I suppose you have a point.
Everybody just needs to relax. Do some yoga.
So is it true that in this game, if you beat it in like a certain amount of time, you get the secret ending where the camera pans out, and it turns out the game was just the pottery scene from Ghost the whole time?
I really hope it's true. That would be awesome.
Game of the year 2015.
Game of the year 2015. Fucking Apotheon starring Patrick Swayze. Ugh.
Isn't he dead?
Yes.
Oh, who cares? Whatever. After Roadhouse, I was kind of done with Patrick Swayze.
If it's not Roadhouse, then I want no part of it.
Point Break is quality entertainment.
Roadhouse. So yeah,
Roadhouse was really good.
It is really good. But yeah, this Apotheon game, like, it's out on PC. It's out on PS4. I think it's coming to Mac later this year. I think the regular price for it is about $15, like $10 or $15. I think it's totally worth it at that price point. It's a lot of fun. It's about a 10-hour game, you know. And if you like Metroidvania style stuff, this is right up your alley, man.
Totally awesome. Well, that game certainly sounds neat.
It is. There you go. Erase neat, everything neat I just an said and word. Be like Apotheon.
Neat.
It's neat. Neat.
It's neat. I do have a way with words.
You do.
Well, thank you for sharing your pottery simulation, Dan.
That's right.
I'm beyond excited.
You are a cunning linguist, my friend.
Tiff, what have you been up to?
I'm gonna preface mine by saying that before I say all the things I'm about to say, let me just say that I do really like this game. Now let me tell you everything that's wrong with it. I am playing Frogware's 7th installment, I believe now, Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishment.
And let's start right there.
Oh god, it's such a bad name. It is the worst title ever.
Crimes and Punishments, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, there was a Law and Order Crime and Punishment, but it was just Crime
no, this
and
is,
Punishment.
This is Crimes and Punishment.
So it's pluralized.
Well, the crimes part is...
Crimes and Punishments?
No, it's just Crimes and Punishment. It's terrible. There are layers of why it's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. Okay, now let's move on to the game. I have liked some of the other Sherlock Holmes, Adventures of Sherlock Holmes games that Frogware has done. I've not played some of them. Some of them did horribly. All in all, they seem to be the authority on it. This particular installment was touted as, you know, this is the greatest. Oh no, I guess it is Crimes and Punishments. We just looked it up. Okay, so two plurals. Still terrible. It was touted as, like, you know, all the great things that you loved about these Sherlock games, except now we've stepped into the world of real big boy video games and we have excellent graphics and all this kind of crazy stuff. And it was presented to me as if this was Sherlock Holmes L.A. Noir style. I don't know if you guys played L.A. Noir, but I loved...
So it's UK Noir.
Sure.
1800s UK Noir.
I loved L.A. Noir. That game blew me away. Not the least of which because I grew up in Los Angeles, so seeing all of the real world locations in that, they just did a phenomenal job. So when I heard this is L.A. Noir meets Sherlock Holmes, I was like, well, this is going to be my favorite video game of all time. I am really enjoying it. I feel like the graphics could have been better. And it's far and away better than any other Sherlock game, and on the surface, it does look very pretty. However, I feel like L.A. Noir was more advanced and definitely had better graphics, and considering that L.A. Noir came out 4 years ago at this point...
Something like that.
I feel like that's kind of unacceptable. The... my mind was my train of thought. The motion capture, I don't even know if they did motion capture. The characters are pretty good. The facial acting is pretty good on them. The body language is a little boxy. There's times where, like, they bend their arms and you can see the edge of the rectangle from the lower half of the arm, where it just seems very out of place. It seems like they tried really hard to make a very current and, state-of-the-art kind of thing. And there's just parts of it. For instance, there's one part where you come across a series of doors that are just background. They're not anything you can interact with. But the doors have door knockers on them, like lion's head traditional English door knockers on them. And if you walk to the side of the building and turn your head and look down the building, it's all two-dimensional. It's like a texture map that was laid over the door. There's not actually a three-dimensional door knocker on there. And I feel like if you weren't going to do that, then don't put a three-dimensional object on this door. Just make it a flat door. Because that takes me back to, like, GoldenEye. And I just don't think that's acceptable. There's some really, really glaring moments like that.
Well, and the problem with that, too, is that the door knockers on the doors that you can open are three-dimensional.
But the stuff that you can't interact with is very two-dimensional.
It kind of looks like it's
very jarring.
It kind of looks like in development they just went, well, you're not going to open it anyway. Yeah, It's fine.
I feel like there were a lot of shortcuts here. Now, skipping over that and getting to the actual gameplay, there are intolerable load times. To any time that you travel or you go from one seed to another, Sherlock rides in a carriage or on a train or in a cart to get to the other places. And while that's happening, your little load circle is going on in the bottom. So you're like, okay, we're loading to get to the next thing. Now, these are adventure games. These are point and click adventure games. This is not heavy duty involved Assassin's Creed type games. This is walk up to the man, talk to him, and pick something from the selection. So I'm finding the excessive load times very confusing, because not only do you ride a carriage for a long time to get to your next destination, but quite often after you've ridden in your carriage, the screen goes blank for a few seconds while it continues to load. And so the load times seem really bizarre to me, and it really can slow down the pace of the game. If you have just uncovered a clue or just talked to a witness or something like that, and you're like, ooh, I'm onto something. Now let me go sit in this carriage for like 12 seconds. Which doesn't seem like all that long, but when you're just sitting there in the middle of the game, it's very noticeable, we'll say. And I feel like the fact that it's noticeable is a problem. The cases are all original. That is one thing that the whole series has done, is all of the cases are original. And they are interesting cases. I have two more cases to go. There are six total, and thus far they don't seem to be related. They seem to be completely independent cases. Now, it's very possible that when I get to the last case in a Sherlockian fashion, some of the clues from the previous cases will come together to reach some overarching thing. But it's not like the other installments in the series where, you know, Jack the Ripper is the bad guy and all of the cases that we solve are to get to him or things like that. There doesn't appear to be an overreaching antagonist. But the cases are interesting, and there's a little bit of problems with pacing. There are times where it seems like you spend forever looking at every little bit and clue in a room, and then all of a sudden there will be a cutscene, and I chase a guy, and I catch a guy, and then the whole thing's over. And you're like, whoa, wait, what, huh, what? So that can be a little off. But let me switch to the things that I like about it. They are very intelligent cases for the most part. One in particular, I'm not going to, you know, go into spoilers, but I believe it's the third case I found, very intriguing. I thought it was very clever how they did it. I'm still able to solve all of them, which makes me feel real good about myself. And that's what I like out of my video game is, you know, I want to feel smart when I play my video game. I don't like feeling like my video game is smarter than me. So I appreciate that. that doesn't mean that they're easy or anything like that. They are solvable. One other little gripe I have about it is I actually as I was playing through the very first case, I actually had to quit the game and start over. And the reason for that is because in one moment I missed a clue. And because I missed that clue, it didn't trigger another event in the game, and there was no way to get back to it. Once I realized that I had missed something, there was no other way to trigger that scenario in the game, and because I couldn't trigger that scenario, there was no way to solve the case. So I spent a good portion of time just wandering around trying to figure out how to move forward, and it wasn't actually possible to move forward because I had missed a clue 3 scenes previously. So that was a little irritating. I understand that they were going for kind of a real world, put the clues together and make your own assumption kind of thing, but I don't feel like in real life when you're trying to solve a case that there is only one avenue to a conclusion, and if you don't go down that avenue, everything is ruined forever. So that was very frustrating.
Well, and it is still a video game. You still should be able to beat it.
Right. Because ultimately at that point, I literally had no other choice but to quit the game and start over. I literally could not proceed any further. This one has some unique aspects to it. What you actually do is you run around and look for clues and you make deductions and whatnot, and then you switch to almost like a neural web. It is a very futuristic looking brain space, if you will, and you'll pick up a clue and you kind of attach 2 clues together, and it'll come up with like a new little spot will appear on your screen, and it'll be like, this guy is lying or this guy is telling the truth, and you pick one of those and the little neurons will spider off and make connections into the other clues that you have found, and sometimes they match up and sometimes they won't match up, and sometimes they'll match up and a new conclusion will pop up from the things that you've matched together. And sometimes that will lead on to other stuff, and sometimes those conclusions are incorrect. So you have to really pay attention, and you have to pick correctly, which can be kind of a problem sometimes, because you could be 7 or 8 or 9 steps down in your conclusions and get to a dead end and realize that you picked the wrong response from the very first one, and you got to go back and go through all the clues again and try and get them to all match up in a way that makes sense, which is very cool, but there are a couple of parts on it where it's like, this was a bit slapdash. There's really no logical reason for this to be like this. This is just kind of a thing that you threw in here.
It's video game logic.
Yeah, there are some video game logics in there, and you're like, okay, you know, I've been trying really hard to be like totally logical about this, and this one is just kind of a video game thing, and it just makes
it
stand out.
He can just double jump. Because.
No. But so there are some pretty glaring missteps, but I will say that the reason I think they are so glaring is because it is a really quality game. I am really enjoying it. I am really a lot of times when people try to do Sherlock things, try to do new Sherlock cases that aren't based on the originals, you can tell very much that this is an aftermarket Sherlock. But they are doing a really, really fine job on the cases. I'm really enjoying them. The acting is really good for the most part. It's got a few things in it that are clearly trying to tie it to the new sexy Sherlock, you know, the BBC Sherlock or the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock. The characterization profiles that you do, it has you like zoom and twirl around the witness and like wrinkles under the eyes. He's super focused and a patch on his sleeve, and he's not as rich as he seems, and like there's a couple things like that where it's like we have a really traditional set in England of the time period Sherlock, but then like this hyper futuristic neural map, and like so there are a couple things that are a little inconsistent like that, but all in all I think it's really quality. It certainly could have been done better, but I absolutely think that this is Frogware's best installment so far, and I definitely think that they're on the right track. And also, irritatingly enough, because I just paid for it, it's one of the free games on the PlayStation
Plus for March.
Yeah, PlayStation Plus for March. It's a free game.
On PS3.
So, I think that it would probably not look as good on PS3, obviously, and the load times are probably going to be even more awful on PS3, but for a free game, it's certainly, you're going to get a decent time enjoyment out of it.
Well, sweet deal. That sounds like a cool game. Sounds like Sherlock. Sherlock Simulator 2015. Got it.
Game of the year, 2015. Nah, if it doesn't have Cumberbatch, it's not for me.
No, it's based on the late 70s, early 80s ITV series. It's, what was that guy's name?
Jeremy Piven.
Jeremy Betts, I think.
Jeremy Piven.
No, not Jeremy Piven.
Shut up, Dan.
It's loosely based on that pairing of Sherlock and Watson. It's not 100%, but it's close enough.
I think they should retroactively put Benedict Cumberbatch in it.
Cumberbatch or broke.
Yeah.
I think they should retroactively put Jeremy Piven in it, now that I'm just sitting here thinking about it.
And Jeremy Renner.
I'm just daydreaming about Jeremy Piven now.
Okay. Well.
And Jeremy Irons.
Ooh.
Yes. I think that's a person.
Love that
guy.
Oh
my God, there needs to be a Jeremy Piven, Jeremy Renner, Jeremy Irons, like, movie.
Called Steve's.
They all go to Steve Martin's house and steal his banjo and get into hijinks. God, that sounds like the best movie ever.
We already made a new Kickstarter coming out, guys. Get ready for it.
Steve's Movie of the Year 2015.
You know, we should actually just make a bunch of fake Kickstarters and fucking put them up, see if they get any money.
Already there.
I don't know. That guy made like $100,000 making an egg salad.
That fucking... I don't even want to talk about that.
Wish I had $100,000.
I wish I had some egg salad.
Potato salad.
Potato salad, even better. Now I want some potato salad. That sounds delicious.
Mm, it does.
Well, either way, Sherlock Holmes game, it sounds pretty cool.
It's really fun to watch, actually.
Well, yeah, because all these adventure games are like, you know, choose-your-own-adventure movies, really. Oh, that was the other cool thing. There are, just like in other adventure games, when you solve the case or when you're trying to apprehend a suspect or you know, various things like that, or even during the puzzles, there are a few actual video game moments where it's like, ooh, punch the guy before he runs away. But all of those moments are skippable, which I found very appealing. Because there was one puzzle that I was trying to do at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was one of those like... you know, Steve is taller than Sally. Sally is twice the height of Joe. And Joe is, you know, 5'7". You know, whatever it was.
Joe is an asshole.
That's immaterial.
Define X.
Yeah, so it was a puzzle that's kind of like that. And ordinarily, I really enjoy those types of puzzles. But I couldn't find anything to write with, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And every time I thought I had it figured out, it kept being wrong. And the phrase that he said... when I got it wrong was just making me really angry. So I was really,
I feel like a shit.
I don't remember what he was saying, but for some reason in my, you know, sleep addled brain, I was like, just do it, you asshole. I was just getting really angry. So at that moment I was like, oh, there's a skip button and you can just skip it with no repercussions. Like you can just skip it and it's fine and it'll just move on. It's not like you get like dinged on points or anything if you skip it. So I did really appreciate that, because there were a couple of moments where just out of the blue, somebody would run and attack you and you'd have to defend yourself. And I would go, ah, skip, because I just wasn't expecting it. And the bad thing is that if you don't skip through those moments and you fail, then you've just failed. There's no like, oh, let me try that again. Like, no, you've just failed. So all of those things come together to kind of mold the outcome of the story, you know, depending on who you pick as a suspect, depending on what you choose to do. Like, there's a moral choice at the end of every case of you've solved it. This is who the suspect is. Now you understand that he committed this crime because of this and because of that, so he really shouldn't go to jail, so I'm not going to tell the police. Or fuck this guy. String him up.
Shoot him in the face.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be any consequences for doing that. Like, it doesn't seem to change the story depending on if you're lenient or if they're not. It really just seems like it's just an added thing to put in there. But, you know, for the record, I sent all of my people to jail because go to jail. I don't know. That seemed funner.
Don't be a criminal. That's easy.
There's a lot of unique things in it, and there's a lot of fun things in it that are really making it enjoyable to play. And I really feel like if this is any kind of successful at all and they get to continue on from here, I feel like the next game is going to be awesome.
Neat.
Yeah.
No, we've already used neat for Apotheon. Come up with something else, master of words.
Mathematical.
Spiffy.
Yeah, spiffy works.
Cheese.
Nope, that's not a good one. Sherlock Holmes, it's like cheese.
Full of holes.
Oh! Well done.
Chris, 10 points.
And I win. Well, I'm going to go count my points while we take a break. We're going to come back and we'll discuss what I and myself and Dean have been playing for the month of February.
Wait,
and
you get to go twice?
Hosting points. Tired.
10 points.
Really?
Yes! Got 20 points now.
No, don't count them yet. You got to count them while we're on the break.
We should all determine what our houses are.
Oh, that was the nerdiest thing you've ever said.
I get to be Ravenclaw.
Yay!
My darling hubby is a Hufflepuff.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back. Boy, that was a fruitful break. Lots of fruit involved.
Actually, so, it was really spicy.
It was very spicy. There was talk of buffalo sauce and couches, and we're just going to leave it at that. So, Dean, why don't you pick up where we left off? What was your game of February?
You really want me to go there?
I do.
You really want me to do this?
I want you to do it.
All right, let's do this.
Ew. I'm ambivalent.
What?
I'm ambivalent. You can do it. Well, you can not do it. Whatever. You do you.
I have to.
Okay.
Because if I don't, then I might as well not be on the podcast. So, first game, I did three things, all very short. First thing I played was Overlord, which is old game from Xbox 360. I think it was strictly Xbox 360 when it came out. It's basically a watered-down RTS game, sort of like Pikmin, but a bit more contrived and creepy.
Minions.
You control minions and whatnot. They rove the landscape, pillage and everything. It's a lot of fun. A great game. If you ever get a chance to download it, it was on sale last week. That's why I bought it. It was like $2.79. It's a no-brainer. It's tons of fun. Hours of activities to do in the game. And to be honest, for spending two and change, I couldn't ask for anything more. It was good when it came out for $40, so spending $2.79 was very, very simple for me.
I think that was Xbox 360 and Atari Lynx.
Oh, okay, Atari Lynx. Got it.
What is the name of this game?
PS3 version. Overlord.
Overlord. Okay.
I feel like that was on PS3.
That actually sounds kind of cool. That sounds like something I could be into.
They made a second one, so I think the second one was on PS3.
There was a Wii version of Overlord too. I don't remember what it was called.
Pikmin?
Yeah, no. It had a special name. No, it was
Lemmings?
No. Shut up, let me go on.
StarCraft. It was StarCraft, that's the other version of...
Oh, Castlevania.
Panzer Dragoon.
Rainbow Six?
Hashtag math problems.
No, you guys were not excited enough about our game, so now we're going to give you all of the shit. All of it. Not even some of it. All of it. All of the shit I can find.
I was plenty fucking excited. I said simulator a couple times.
I am only going
to... Sherlock Holmes deserves your respect, sir.
I'm going to give Dean 6 shits.
He deserves my respect when he's fucking in a TV show and looking sexy as fuck as Benedict Cumberbatch. Not anytime else.
I know. You know, I gotta be honest. Anytime I do... Like, I love Sherlock, like, from the youth. Sherlock and me are boys. But I... Ever since BBC Sherlock came out, every time I see a Sherlock thing, I'd be like, you know, there could be some more Cumberbatch in this. Just saying.
Except the Grey Mouse.
I say that about my refrigerator. I say that about everything.
There certainly could be more Cumberbatch in my refrigerator. He's tasty.
Okay. All right, next so game Overlord. I want to talk about. Yeah, Overlord. Good game. Download it. It's cheap as fuck, so download it. Second game I want to talk about is by Adult Swim Studios, which I was very surprised by because the manner of this game was pretty serious. It's called Oblitus, which I didn't know what to expect. It looked cool from the picture, so I was like, cool, fucking download it. It was $10. Sure, why not? I got extra money to burn. So I did that. It was cool. It's in that same vein that Dan was talking about with Pottery Simulator 2015. It's a Metroidvania type game. You get to collect different weapons. You can upgrade your health and everything. The thing that got me, though, is you only get one shot at beating it. So if you can't beat it and you die, like, at the first boss, second boss, doesn't matter when the fuck you die. If you die, game restarts. So it's like an old school console or arcade game, which kind of got me because there's not a lot of games like that anymore where there's no save points or anything and you just have to go ham and try and beat it. So I was intrigued by this. It's a cool game. It's only $10. That's at full price. So if you get a chance, download it. It's well worth the money. There's a lot of cool art going on. The enemies are really interesting. And it's the bosses are huge. They're like literally three stories tall. They don't fit on a screen, kind of like Kraid from Metroid. So, I mean, maybe that's where they got it from. But I enjoyed the game a lot. I haven't beaten it, but it's certainly a really, really cool game. And if anyone's looking for a difficult game to play, that would be it. Last game that I want to talk about is, no surprise to anyone, a MOBA. It's called Heroes of the Storm from Blizzard. I really went in depth on it the past month and played a lot of time with it. Got to the max level and everything, played in ranked games and all that. It's a lot of fun. If anyone gets a chance and they're in the beta, please use your beta invite and play the game. It's well worth it. They're adding a lot of cool characters. If you want to play as Diablo, that's a thing you could do. You want to play as Jim Raynor from StarCraft? That's also a thing you could do. You want to play as a gigantic Tauren holding the guitar? Sure, you could do that too. It's got everything. So please, go ahead and play it. It's definitely one of those MOBA games that'll stick out and probably be one of the front runners for how the esports thing is going to go in the future. Blizzard's a huge company, so I can't see them really losing on this. It's just one of those games that's done really, really well, and I don't see this falling behind League of Legends or Dota. So yeah, if you get a chance, check that out. It's free, especially when it comes out of beta. It will be free to play. All you have to do is buy some characters with real money or fake money if you want. You can play a bunch of games and, you know, just buy whatever you want at that point. It'll take time, but you'll get there. So I think that's it. I covered everything, and I did that really fucking quick. High five to me.
Do you think Do you think Heroes of the Storm will overtake Dota or League of Legends? Because I know, like, obviously that's their plan, right? You don't get into that space with those games being as popular and as money heavy as they are without trying to overcome. And none of us know shit about it, so.
Do Wait, I but, think so?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
But
no.
But before you answer that question, answer me this. Did you just high-five yourself?
Yeah, you're fucking right, I did.
Good for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. It's a much more simplistic type game, and it appeals to a different audience. Dota and League of Legends have this way of being very, very in-depth with, you know, all these items you have to buy and leveling strategies you have to remember. Like, so I'm sure you've seen all these characters that you pick have four abilities and you level them up as you go.
Yeah.
In Dota and League of Legends, you know, there's certain things you could pick to power them up. Some things you don't even put any points in because it's worthless. Heroes of the Storm, you don't really do that. Everything just kind of levels as you go and everything's unlocked as is. It's more focused on getting into a team fight rather than farming and building up enough money to buy these overpowered items, so when you hit end game 60 minutes in, it turns into this whole sort of team fight thing. No, this happens as soon as you start the game. It's more built around working with your team and building a strategy on how to play rather than just working for yourself and kind of leveling up and, you know, seeing what happens at the end of the game at that point. So, I mean, with a heavier focus on a team-based aspect, it's probably going to catch on to a different audience, mainly because it's much more simplistic in nature, and I don't think League of Legends and Dota people will likely find this game as entertaining or as challenging as the games they play right now. However, I do think this will attract a more casual type audience, which is probably what Blizzard is looking for, because they want their fan base with WoW, Hearthstone, and those games, and StarCraft to come in and play this game. That's what I think their main target was when they made this. So I think they did accomplish that, because they added a lot of cool characters. They added all these stories. They added really cool skins to go along with them. And I think they're going to accomplish what they set out to do. And I think this will be a very successful game when it does release after beta.
Right on.
I have a question for you.
Shoot.
Did you say you just have to go ham?
Yeah, you gotta go ham, bro.
Chris, do you not know what ham is?
No. I mean, hard I know what ham is. I eat ham all the time.
Hard as a motherfucker. You gotta go ham in the paint, son.
Get with it.
I'm what sorry. It do? I've never been with it. I can't get with it.
You I've, goddamn
I I've been
funny
diagnosed
duddy.
With incapability of getting with it. I'm forever
Chris, just tell us what fucking games you play and get it over with.
Tell us about your Zubats.
Well, the games I've actually probably played the most this last month were games that I'm not really going to talk about on here. Like, I've been playing a lot of UN Squadron because I plan on doing a Lost in Time article about it. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon for Pokemon Propitiation, and fuck Zubats. Fuck them forever. And anger and rage. Why is everyone an asshole in that game? Like, I walk into a cave and there's just this girl standing by a sign. She's like, I'm waiting for my friends. And then all of a sudden we're fighting Pokemon. I'm just like, I just wanted to walk through a cave. I just wanted to walk by, read the sign, mind my own business. And the girl's just like, nah, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to make my Clefairy fright your shit. And I'm like, ah, oh, God, everything in Pokemon is insane. Like, the game is just absolutely insane. But anyway, before I get to the game that I want to talk about, I want to talk about a cool story that happened to me today. I was on this Facebook group for classic video games, and I posted, you know, because my Virtual Boy's been out of commission for a good long while now. There's some wiring in all Virtual Boys that just eventually is just going to go crap out no matter what you do. And the left eye on my Virtual Boy went a while back, and I was looking for somebody to fix it. So I just posted, does anybody know who can fix it? And Joe Santulli commented that Digital Press fixes them now. And I was like, holy shit, I just happened to be going up to Digital Press on Saturday, so I'll drop my Virtual Boy off. And I did, and the excellent, excellent associate there named Leo, he took my Virtual Boy in. He called me back a few hours later and said it was already done. So he fixed my Virtual Boy like a champ, and I'm so excited to actually plug this thing in and play some of those games again. Because even though it's, you know, red and impossible to see and gives you headaches, there are some really cool games on that thing. So I'm jazzed as hell. And Krista and Leo at Digital Press, thank you for being extraordinarily cool and helpful today.
Shout out to Krista and Leo. Big fans of the show.
Big fans of the show. Big fans.
Epilepsy
of the show.
Simulator 2015.
Console of the year. The other cool thing that happened while I was at Digital Press was, all right, so I have an Odyssey 100, 200, 300, and 500.
And that's a lot of Odysseys.
It is. I have an Odyssey 2 as well. But for the original, like, runs, I don't have the original Odyssey. It's really high on my list of things to buy one day, but they're stupid expensive. I mean, because they are stupid. And, but clearly, as am I, so we're meant for each other. I just have to come up with an instance where I can afford to buy one. But so as I walk in there to pick up my Virtual Boy at the end of the day, what is sitting on the counter but a boxed Odyssey 400? I had 1, 2, 3, and 5, and there's a 400 sitting right there. So I walk over and I ask Leo, what's up with this Odyssey 400? Is it for sale? Like, he said it just got there. They haven't been able to test it. It's kind of nasty. It stinks of a basement. It's kind of filthy. And it's a little bit broken on the inside because we were trying to test it out.
So it was love at first sight, is what you're saying? Smelled like a basement, kind of nasty. You're
absolutely
like, I have to have this.
Absolutely. I was looking at that thing like, oh, I need to have this. So he wanted to test it out first, and he didn't have the AC adapter for an Odyssey 400 because the Odysseys had this extremely proprietary stuff. Like both the AC adapters and the RF switches are very unique to Odysseys. But the thing about these 100 series Odysseys is that they can also run on batteries. So we cracked open the bottom of it to get to the batteries, the 6C batteries that this thing can run off of. And the batteries had been stored in there when this was obviously stored in a basement. And so they exploded, but they exploded in a way that actually pushed them outwards. So the plastic part that holds the batteries in place had snapped off. So we couldn't test the thing. It was kind of in crappy shape. It has the box and everything. And he sold it to me for $5.
Yeah, it's worth it.
I was thrilled. I was so happy. I was expecting him to say, like, $20 or something. He was like, since I can't test it and I have no idea it works and it's clearly broken, I'll sell it to you for $5. I was like, yes, I'll take it. Add it to my bill. I was so happy. So now I have all of the 100 series Odysseys. I'm pretty sure. I don't think there was a 600. I think after 500 they started labeling them in the thousands, and then they did an Odyssey 2. But hooray for $5 Odyssey 400 that I will try to fix one day with super glue and prayers.
That does not work.
That does not work. It might work. I might, because I mean, I just need to find a power supply for it. I can't imagine it wouldn't work. Like, there's not much electronics inside of the thing to go wrong.
Bring it to the fat man, he'll fix it.
Who?
My father. Well, I call him the fat man.
Your father's not fat.
Does he call you Jake?
Sometimes. But regardless, if you want someone to fix it, he can fix anything.
It's a really weird fucking dynamic. Our entire relationship is based off this mid-90s TV show no one liked.
Actually, what happened was I was watching Family Guy one day, and I just started calling him a fat man after that. And that was 4 years ago. And then my girlfriend made me feel really bad for calling him fat man. And I mistyped fat man one day because I was drunk, and it turned out farman. So now he wants me to call him farman, just so I don't call him fat man. But that just sounds like he's Tommy Chong, and I don't want to call him farman. Yeah,
sounds
I don't
like
want to call
Mega
him.
Man
it's
villain.
Just weird. It makes me think like he's stoned all the time. He's going to come out of the basement with a hippie bandana.
I don't want to call my dad Farman. I want to call him Fat Man. You're
so,
a terrible person.
So this Mega Man villain, when you defeat him and you get his power, you get the power to just send the enemies.
That's kind of a useful ability. If you want to constantly
you go over there. Go. Just go.
How far? I don't know. Far, man. It's in my name.
Chris, I'm sorry.
No need.
I'm not.
Best Mega Man villain of 2015.
Shout out to Fat Man. Big fan of the show.
Big fan of the show. All right, so the game I've been playing that I want to talk about is Phantasy Zone 3D on 3DS. I love Phantasy Zone. My first experience with Phantasy Zone was Phantasy Zone 2, actually, on the Master System. And I eventually tracked down a copy of the first Phantasy Zone for Master System. And I thought they're super bright and colorful. They're insanely, insanely difficult. It's like they're cute as a Kirby game, but they're as punishing as, like, Contra. There's such a strange dichotomy, but...
So it sounds like some BDSM going on with your 3DS there.
3D BDSM?
Ooh, 3DSM.
Ooh.
I was going to say, like, 50 Shades of NES Gray, but...
50 Shades of Let's Get the Fuck Going. I want to finish this.
So, I later found out that Phantasy Zone was an arcade game. I had never seen the arcade version of Phantasy Zone before, and same with Phantasy Zone 2, because clearly they were far more popular in Japan. There was an unlockable version of the arcade version of Phantasy Zone in the Genesis, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection for PS3 and 360, but I never wound up buying that game because I had already spent way too much money on them on Virtual Console, and I was just not going to do it again. But this version of 3D Fantasy Zone is just a 3D remake. And when I say 3D, that means they added the like depth 3D effect to the arcade game. So it is literally the arcade game, complete with the fantastic music, just with an optional 3D effect, which is pretty neat. You know, it's only a couple of bucks, and the Sega 3D classics that they've been doing have been really, really good. I downloaded the Sonic the Hedgehog, and it was just really neat. It was very well done. It's just Sonic the Hedgehog, but they're very clean translations of these games. And along with Fantasy Zone, they've also recently released 3D versions of Afterburner and Space Harrier, which are about $8 a piece, which make them a little bit steep for those games, but man, Space Harrier in 3D has got to be cool. So, kind of on the fence on that one. Same with Afterburner, but regardless, Fantasy Zone I absolutely love, and I hope they release the Fantasy Zone 2 3D, because that came out in Japan, I think. But playing the arcade version of this when growing up on the Master System version is just like a crazy trippy experience, even more so than the game is itself, because, like I said, it is insanely colorful, but super awesome, super difficult, side-scrolling shooter. You're a little spaceship called Opa Opa, and you float around and sprout legs when you're on the ground for no reason at all.
Because
Japan.
Yes, because Japan. Because the subtitle of the second game, it's Fantasy Zone 2, The Tears of Opa Opa. And it's like this super bright, colorful, happy game that's punishingly difficult about a crying spaceship. I don't know what is going on in Fantasy Zone. I have no idea what is happening, and I feel it's better off that I don't, because I swear, you have to fly around, like, you have a little bit more control over where you go. Like, it's an automatically scrolling game, but you scroll back and forth, and it kind of loops over and over again. But and you have to find these little enemy bases and shoot the crap out of them until they explode. And I swear, the enemy bases in the first level of Fantasy Zone 2 just look like floating apple pies. It's... I don't know what's going on, but I love it. Fantasy Zone is awesome. 3D Fantasy Zone.
Social commentary on Japan's negative feelings towards the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs in America. It's a very deep game. Can't believe you didn't pick up on that. Jesus
Christ.
Just
went right over my head.
Thanks, History Channel. Shut the fuck up.
Are you playing this on the old 3DS or the new
3DS?
I'm still playing it on my XL because I have not bought a new 3DS yet. But the thing that I was most skeptical about that they were talking about with the new 3DS was that they made the 3D effect way better. Like, you can see it from the sides and stuff.
Aria has confirmed that, yes, the 3D effect is better.
I tried it out in a store, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, Aria said it's fantastic. It works great. The head tracking on it is beyond, so, yeah.
Yeah, when I found out what it was, that it's doing head tracking, I was like, there's no way. And I also heard it's, like, kind of difficult with people with glasses. I walked right into a Toys R Us. I picked it up. It had Majora's Mask 3D on it, which I was like, oh, I want to buy you. And I tilted it to the side, and I could still see in 3D. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. And I kept moving my head around, and it was tracking me perfectly. So, kind of made me really want to pick up a new 3DS. Plus,
I
kind of
don't
want
to give Nintendo that much power to be, like,
props
tracking
to Uncle
me
Reggie, big fan of the show. Uncle Reggie knows all.
Like,